Good evening. Welcome to the Soleri Report, and Happy New Year. It's January 3rd, 2013. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Tonight, our annual wrap-up for 2012. We look back at 2012, forward at 2013, and my goal is to take a strategic view of where we're going that will help make you smarter and more joyful, which will be important this year in navigating the risks and opportunities that lie ahead. I spend a lot of time working on the annual report. I'm a little bit like a hound dog who's looking for the duck, because what I want you to get is a couple of very important sort of deeper insights about what's been happening and what's coming that will really help you maintain your perspective over the next year. I'm going to try and do it in an hour and a half, but if you look at the material, I could go even longer. I've promised a lot of people I won't talk fast, so if you can't stick with us, we'll have the transcript ready in approximately 2 weeks. Great graphics. We try and really go to town on the annual wrap-up, so if you can't stick with us, don't worry. We'll have the transcript out to you. And even if you can stick with us, I recommend going through the transcript again when it's ready, because it's there's nothing, perspective is worth a lot of IQ points. Every year we do a poster for the year, and we have copies of all of them in the transcript, although they're all in the back of the blog. Last year our poster was Beginning is Near for 2012, sort of a takeoff on The End is Near, and sure enough, December 21st, I don't know about you, but I had a beautiful day throughout the winter solstice. But certainly the world did not end, so we didn't get out of any of our responsibilities. This year the poster is really, Ben Lazzardi, who does our posters, has outdone himself. It's called Coming Clean. You saw it in the update, and it's a pair of hands washing. And for those of you who've read our Coming Clean article, you know our concept of coming clean. But we think this is going to be a year when the process forces a lot of people into the opportunity of coming clean, and so that's our theme tonight, and it's going to be our theme for the year. We have slides on the webinar software, so if you want to track with where we are in the update, I have 15 sections to go through, including some wonderful questions, and I'm going to take as long as I need to answer all the questions, so feel free to post more on the webinar software. So I would encourage you to take a look at the slides, and you can know where we are by checking in with the slides we have. We'll track the sections with them. Okay, well, our first section, again, 15 sections. First section is coming clean. Coming clean is the process by which we shift the corruption out of our entire lives, from our hearts and our minds, through our transactions, through who we associate with. Think of it as Jeffrey Smith, who we did a great Soleri Report, author of the book Genetic Roulette and the maker of the documentary Genetic Roulette, in fact, who's one of the winners this year for Movie of the Year. He said in describing GMO food that we have to take the yuck factor up and think of coming clean as a way of getting all the yuck out of your life. 2013 is the 100th anniversary of the creation of the Federal Reserve and the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President Kennedy. And if you want to look back at trim tab events that really turned things and left us in the situation we're in now, much greater centralization, it's in no small measure because of our failure to come clean after we made those mistakes. And letting literally the central banking warfare model blossom into a parasite that is now invasively trying to control everything that walks, talks, and moves on planet Earth. One of the secrets to engaging in the coming clean process is that you want to organize it in a way that gives you practical energy day to day. So you're looking for a way of sequencing the coming clean process in a way that saves you time, saves you money, builds up your energy day to day, and makes you stronger. And I think as change accelerates, we're going to see a lot more people in the middle class be challenged. And what you're seeing is a tipping point of people who've been hit by what one of my old colleagues used to call the smite button. It's different things for everybody. Sandy, Hurricane Sandy in New York, and the government response to it, told a lot of people what folks in the Gulf and in New Orleans had learned on Katrina and the Gulf oil spill, which is, or the Kentucky power crash, Basically, the messages were on our own. A lot of people have been hitting on the smite button over vaccines and autism and sort of ways their children have been harmed or somebody in their family has been harmed from a variety of different issues in the traditional health system. The smite button could be money issues. It could have been the 2008 crash, foreclosures, unemployment, bailouts. And finally, a lot of folks got their hearts and emotions pumped and dumped on thinking that President Obama was able to bring real change as opposed to simply implementing the will of the machinery marching in the same direction it's been going for a long time. Some of us are going to see what's happening and jump the curve, as I call it. We're going to keep learning. We're going to keep adapting. We're going to reposition ourselves economically. We're not going to leave the matrix because the matrix at this point is everywhere. It's pretty invasive. But we can navigate it with a free heart and a free mind. Now, that's not free from the frustration at times, which can be mind-numbing. Certainly was over the last month. One of my New Year's resolutions was I was going to try and be more coherent in 2012. And there were times in December, especially when they smashed down the gold price, that coherence was a struggle. But some people are going to reach out and move into the future. Some are going to stay completely entrained. And I think one of the challenges for all of us is, for the most part, people who aren't going to make it, we're not going to be able to help everybody, and we're not going to be able to associate with everybody if they're not willing to sort of move into the future. And I think that's the hardest part of coming clean is letting go of the people who don't have the intent or the competency or the character, the energy to do so. Now, we're always, you know, I love people who are never going to come clean, and I'm not going to stop loving them and stop helping them just because they're not. That's sort of the nature of close friends and family sometimes. But keeping people in our lives who are splitting off in that way is going to be increasingly expensive. And so I think you want to be very, very careful about this sort of divide in the population and the people who move into the future and those who don't and how you manage it in your own family and your own life. The opportunity for real change is absolutely remarkable. When you look at the numbers of what the economy could be like if it was fully optimized and what some of the new technology and the good aspects of globalization will allow us to do, you realize how wonderful life could be. It's amazing. One of the biggest businesses now in the developed world is trying to scare you to death. I think big media and a government job program is really, you know, out to create a lot more fear than there is. And so it's very important for all of us to maintain our inner giggle, I would say, to navigate the war on terror and the growing market share of the global war machine. It's possible to do. It's important to do. And every minute that you maintain your state of amusement is, I can't tell you how good it is for a shift of everything. Some of my favorite Solari reports in 2012 were with John Rappaport. We did one in February called The Matrix Revealed, and we talked about John's interviews with Ellis Medavoy, the PR expert, who sort of helped manipulate the media for the powers that be. And one of the stories that John and I talked about several times this year, but in The Matrix Revealed, is the extent to which Ellis confessed that no matter how much and how often they thought they had the population tricked, that there was this sort of divine intelligence out ahead of them that they could never quite control. And despite all the invasiveness of the technology and social media and everything else, I think that intelligence is going to continue to outwit the efforts to control. I think ultimately the beauty of the natural world is it's out of control, and that's a good thing. You're going to hear the big lie in 2013 a lot. The big lie is everything is going to hell and there's nothing you can do about it. Or we're all powerful and, you know, we've got it completely locked down and there's nothing you can do about it. And I just want to stress to you again that Winston Churchill was right. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And so that is a lie. Don't listen to it. there's tremendous power in the knowledge that comes with coming clean and hanging around with other people who are clean and coming clean. We have in our subscriber base people who've doing it, you know, they were doing it much longer than I realized the power of it. So they've been doing it for many, many years. And what's incredible to see is when you're with groups of people who've been doing it for a long time and how much they've accomplished. We always, I always enjoy going over to the Franklin's farm to do the precious metals report once a month with him. And I watch the Sanders clan as they work, you know, day in, day out for years. And it's just amazing. They're just off building their little world. And what's amazing, and they're just coming clean as much as they can. And they're having a remarkable time and getting a huge amount done. So whether you've been coming clean for years or just getting started, remember that in 2013, you know, the Titanic's going to dunk a lot more people in the water, and a lot are going to want to get in the arcs. And the more people there are who want to come clean, the more opportunities there are, the more potential allies. So think of that as a great opportunity. One of the things I've been doing for the last couple months is my favorite mystery writer is a guy named Andrew Vox. Sometime I should tell you more about him, but he has a series of books about a private investigator. He's a guy named Burke. I once fell in love with a man just because he reminded me of Burke. And he's a private eye who kind of navigates the underworld of New York street crime and organized crime. And Burke is a man who knows how to live a free and joyous life in a hostile and very lawless territory, and he has the power to create his own family and his own word. And I was just listening to one of his, I've now got all of his books on Books on Tape. I was just listening to one yesterday, and he said, "My family are the people who will not turn me in." 2013 is a year when you want to be someone your family can count on, someone who won't turn in your family. Vax describes the internet as the ultimate op, meaning it's really created and benefits those who are centralizing intelligence. But I think it's more complex for the Ellis Medavoy reason, and that is, you know, we are many, they are few, as the British poet once said. And despite entrainment technology and invasive technology, it cuts two ways. And I think that the shared intelligence is a little bit ahead always and out of control. So coming clean is our focus this year on the Solari Report. This year I want to help inspire you to see the promise of coming clean in your life and support you in that process. And I would just start and end here with a quote from musician John Cage, one of my favorite quotes. It's up on my refrigerator. He says, "Begin anywhere." So if you've been coming clean for 20 years or you haven't started, just pick up your list tomorrow when you look at your schedule and just begin anywhere. Section number two, change the slide, is planet Earth. One of the big trends last year continues to be this year. Weird weather, those of us who live in farming communities or rural areas are very conscious of the weather. The weather is sufficiently weird that now tremendous consciousness everywhere of the weather. As we go through the changes of the weather, it's scary for a lot of people. This year we had a drought. Let me just read you some of what the Wikipedia says about the 2012-2013 North American drought. Is an expansion of the 2010-2012 Southern United States drought, which began in the spring of 2012, includes most of the U.S. parts of Mexico and Central and East Canada. It currently covers 80% of the contiguous U.S. The drought has inflicted and is expected to continue to inflict catastrophic economic ramifications for the affected state. The drought has exceeded, in most measures, the 88-89 North America drought. It's on track to exceed that drought as the costliest natural disaster in U.S. history. The harvest produces massive new wealth every year globally. It's a huge gift. Sometimes when people say, "Oh, there's no way we can deal or pay off the debt," I think they underestimate the extent to which the earth just burps forth incredible new wealth every year. When that gift diminishes, there can be tremendous pain in the economy. one of the two movies that we chose for Movie of the Year on the Salieri Report for 2012 was Michael Murphy's Why in the World Are They Spraying? And I strongly recommend, if you haven't seen it, it's available for free on the internet. And Murphy explores how much the extent to which the weather patterns are related to what's going on with the global spraying program and HARP. Well worth asking, but in the end of the day, there's no way to know how much of the weather patterns relate to the Earth's rotation through the galaxy or sunspots and space weather, which I suspect is a great deal, and how much relates to human activity, whether it's just 7 billion people and counting, or invisible weaponry and technology. It's impossible to say, but I assume it's a combination. I always get frustrated with the different sort of official stories about climate change because I think it's woefully missing an integration of all these phenomena, including chemtrails and HARP. And if you don't know much about those topics, I strongly encourage you to listen to the Salieri reports we've done on them. They're excellent. And so without those phenomena integrated into the conversation, none of it makes much sense to me. The big lie that you're going to hear this year, especially because the Democrats have won, is that we need to increase government power to respond to climate change. We started to hear that drumbeat again after Hurricane Sandy, after the drought, one of the big disasters in North America this year. Hurricane Sandy was quite an experience for those subscribers who lived in New York, because you saw very much the extent to which modern civilization can get shut down and government can be unhelpful in what happens. But as soon as Hurricane Sandy was over, we had both Mayor Bloomberg, a Republican, and the president talking about the need to do things for climate change. So beware that in 2013. If anything, my expectation is that we're going to continue to see more stressful weather patterns in 2013 and 2014. So it's a period we need to move through, and what each one of us can do is think about what is likely to happen in our location and be prepared for a hurricane, a drought, a tornado. You know, think about disaster recovery. So be prepared for weird weather, and more focus on the importance of the planet and the human race coming into alignment with the natural conditions of the planet. Section 3, the space frontier. One of the top stories in 2012 was clearly the Curiosity rover landing on Mars after a very long journey. It took off. Curiosity was launched from Cape Canaveral in November 2011 and then arrived on Mars on August 6, 2012. I keep mentioning space not because I necessarily have a lot to say about it, but I think it's very, very important both strategically and economically to all of us. Bob Dean once said that he believed it is the destiny of our children and grandchildren to travel the stars. I want them to understand that, and I want them to share that destiny, and I think that destiny is ours to be had. I'm hoping to have more Salieri reports in 2013 on space and space development. We're going through a process of privatizing the space activities, shifting a lot of the control and opportunity to the private sector now that government has financed their intellectual capital and technology. There's a lot to be done. It's a big frontier for the economy in the long run, particularly mining and what can be done with robots. One of the things I think we'll hear a lot more about this coming year is sunspots. The activity has risen since 2009 when it dropped to a very low point. It's expected to peak this spring. And if you look at sort of the different evidence of a relationship between the markets and the economy and sunspots, it's something to keep in mind. I keep posting stories on the blog about this space. We don't see a lot in the popular media about what's going on and the sort of movement to invest and build an infrastructure out in space, so I try very much to follow that on the blog. Next section, science and technology. Science and technology, I'm repeating myself from last year's wrap-up, continues to dazzle. It can be electrifying. It can be inspiring and it can be terrifying. One of my favorite Solari reports in 2012 was the view from Silicon Valley when I spoke with my partner, Chuck Gibson, about the innovation that's impacting equity investment. And I would really encourage you to listen to that. Chuck is joining me now for quarterly equity reports, the next one coming up this month on the secular trends in the equity markets. I spend 2.5 hours a day working on the C-Lane Investment Committee, and what I do essentially in those 2 hours is look at company after company after company that is taking new material science, new technology, new sort of opportunities to globalize, and doing really very astonishing and inspiring things. It's a stream of information coming into me, which is so much more encouraging and inspiring than the daily news, or certainly the news I get coming in from internet now that I have global researchers and people all over the world making sure I know about every aspect of all corruption and crime throughout the world. But it's quite remarkable the number of management teams globally that are trying to go to work to create companies to solve the problems and the real problems before us. So it's a very different picture than I think most of us get, and it's very inspiring watching the impact of what is possible. I think the big science story this year was the discovery of the Higgs boson God particle. That was the decision of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Had the collider in Switzerland up as the big scientific development of the year, and that story's up on the blog. One of the things I've watched a lot this year, because I think we're looking at an explosion of innovation down the road that's going to be hitting us in the next 2 to 3 years, is the sort of reinvention of the automobile. We saw by the end of 2012 laws in 3 states permitting driverless cars. If you can imagine, and Avis just bought Zipcars for about a 45% premium over market price. So Avis getting Zipcars is a really augurs the change to a much more fluid, mobile, wired automobile, and a whole sort of different way of relating, particularly in the urban areas, to cars and automobile transportation. A very wired world. But imagine literally driving to the airport and then getting out of your car instead of leaving it in the parking lot, just turning it on and sending it home with no driver. It's quite a different state of affairs. There was a very interesting report from Kiplinger, year-end on robotics, saying a lot of the things I've been saying on the Solari report, but I just wanted to read you some of the highlights. For Kiplinger, it's a long report, so I'm just going to hit. It's called Robotics Coming of Age. The number of and variety of robots in use will soon soar. About 1.4 million industrial robots are already deployed worldwide, plus several million more designed for in-house consumer use. Shipments are growing rapidly. In 2012, manufacturers designed and shipped about 180,000 industrial robots, roughly 50% more than 2010. By 2015, annual sales will top 207,000. The potential for gains is vast. By 2015, sales to North America will grow about 11%. What's propelling the growth? Scientific advances as well as economics. Inexpensive, faster internet connections, cheaper, better microprocessors, new lightweight materials, and the climbing price of labor relative to the price of capital. Now that the central banks have dropped the price of capital to big corporations down to zero. Advanced sensors that will allow robots to adapt to their environment, adjusting speed and pressure, leaps in artificial intelligence, nanotechnology developments, improved technologies and knowledge, mean robots' usefulness will zoom. Tomorrow's bots won't be limited to repetitive chores. Humans and bots working side by side, versatile articulated robotic hands, teachable robots that learn from humans who lack programming skills, self-improving robots that can learn from trial and error much faster than humans. In the next 5 to 10 years, rapid evolution in how robots are employed, industrial workers replaced. Many industries likely to benefit, automated farm workers, They mention a company I'm very interested, worth taking a look at, Blue River Technology. Not public, but doing very, very interesting things, including could make organic food much more accessible. Medical bots, drones, and other military and security automations, an array of household helpers, personal assistance, especially for the elderly living alone. So what does this all mean? What it points out is a huge boost in productivity, but it could put many, many people out of work. They say the growth won't be painless. Robots will displace thousands of workers in a variety of fields. Please note this, China and newly industrialized economies will be hurt the most. The cost efficiency of robotic production methods could draw some manufacturing back to the U.S. However, Kiplinger says it's going to bring the price of goods down so much that there will be greater demand, leaving companies needing more people, not fewer. Finally, employees and employers will suffer. Workers displaced by automation will be unable to find employment unless they have the opportunity, ability, and will to learn the skills needed in increasingly high-tech workplace. And employers will be stymied by the shortage of technologically adept workers. Very important stress on lifelong learning. I spent some time in Holland this year at the Breakthrough Energy Conference in Amsterdam. It was unbelievably inspiring. I have one question from one subscriber about it to tell you more. I've been waiting for the video sets to be ready. They're going to make the videos available from that conference, and there were some very good overviews, introductions to all the different kinds of breakthrough energy, and I'd like to use those to introduce them to you as soon as they're ready. What you saw was there are a lot of great entrepreneurs and tremendous ideas, not a lot of capital. The shutdown of capital going to those areas is very serious. Crowdfunding is hopeful. Crowdfunding in 2013 is going to be a topic that's going to be front and center as soon as the SEC promulgates their regulations. There's going to be, once those come out, my expectation is there's going to be a lot of good and bad. There's a lot of potential for pumping and dumping and all sorts of fraud, but there's a lot of good things that can get done as well. In the terrifying category, again, drones. I think drones are going to be very serious for enforcement purposes. If you haven't seen the new Bourne movie, it's a good one to watch to understand drones. If you also want to understand drones, take a look at one movie we had a couple years ago in the Let's Go to the Movies called The End of Violence. The Bourne movie and The End of Violence give you a sense of this kind of invasive technology. I also posted a recommendation on the blog for a sort of beach reading thriller that Rappaport put me onto called Blacklist that gives you a real feel for the nature, the no privacy nature of the world we're going into. So that's it for technology. Fantastic, wonderful, terrifying, but it's definitely coming. Get ready. Get ready. It's coming whether you like it or not, and it's going to bring about some pretty remarkable and very accelerating change over the next couple of years, and you want to reach out and be in the future about it because it's coming and it's going to be a big wave and we need to surf it. Okay, section number 5, Mr. Global picks Obama. It's always frustrating to me during the presidential elections to see that so many people still think it makes a difference and they don't understand they're picking. You know, it's almost like, do you want Mr. Global in a green suit or in a blue suit? The entrainment was just unbelievable. I do believe that essentially Obama got the nod at the Grove and it was Mr. Global who picked him. Romney refused Condoleezza Rice, and frankly, Obama, as someone with African American lineage, is a much better face for global genocide. If you look at what the American war machine is doing globally, I just think that Obama is a much more effective face to front that machinery than Romney. I think one of the things that happened that really did Romney in was he refused Condoleezza Rice as a running mate. Good for him, but I think that did him in. I think Mr. Global wanted a better face for marketing global genocide and war. But I think the second thing was the Democrats can offer greater control at home. If you look at what needs to happen in the federal budget and the reengineering of retirement benefits and Medicaid and Medicare, invasive control is the order of the day if you're going to cut people's financial benefits. So the Democrats are pushing climate change and control. They're pushing, invasive health care controls. They're now pushing gun control. They're implementing Basel III, tough on the banks, the rollout of the Dodd-Frank bill. We now have a new integration plan from HUD, which is an operational nightmare. It's the most it's the most Soviet thing you've ever seen. It's up on the blog. But the Democrats are pushing controls. The Democrats in California now have a supermajority, and that's important for turning the U.S. economy because California is the 800-pound gorilla. So you now have Democrats in the White House. Everything's going to be done to make it look like Obama has a mandate, which he doesn't. It was funny to see Shelby steaming out of the negotiations on the on the fiscal cliff the other day saying, the president won his election, but so did I. It was kind of funny. Part of the push for control is going to be extension of financial regulations globally. So the IRS is going to be going globally. We're going to see more war against Switzerland in 2013 and 2014, my guess. So if you have global accounts, you want to make sure you're not just in Switzerland, if at all possible. Time called man. Time announced that Obama was man of the year. I think that's trying to make his mandate look much bigger than it is. My favorite quote after the election was, after Sandy Hook, I had one subscriber write to me and say that they had, a friend had posted this on Facebook, been going to the local gun shop for years. I've never seen it as busy as it was today. This is on December 20th. There must have been 70 people inside at two different times today. They told me the president is their employee of the year. All the reports of the gun sales were off the charts. But my question, part of coming clean, is seeing or getting a critical mass of people to look through the puppets and into the real controllers, and let's just pray that that continues to happen. Okay, section number 6, federal finances and the reinvention of everything. There's a little understood fact, and I sympathize tremendously with the effort that Congress has been trying to make, because when you re-engineer the U.S. federal budget, you literally re-engineer the global economy. I've always been amazed at how sort of that is not a popular understanding, and so I finally, over the holidays, decided to sit down and write a very serious piece on the fiscal cliff, but it's not so much on this year's fiscal cliff. It's on the obstacles to reengineering the federal budget. It's called Coming Clean Beyond the Fiscal Cliff, and it lists the 22 sort of infrastructure systemic reasons why reengineering the federal finances has some very deep political challenges, and it's because the federal budget is at the heart of engineering the global model, the central banking warfare model. So when you, and at this point we have an entire upside down pyramid of paper with a huge, trains of derivatives on the top, which is now securitized and trading off of the cash flows that come out of the federal budget. So literally when you re-engineer the federal budget, you're re-engineering the global economy, including the global derivatives book. And that's, conceptually that's simple, but it's complex. We're going to publish it next week, and then we'll be talking about it with Franklin next week on the Precious Metals Market Report as well. Let's talk about sort of the federal finances and the reinvention of everything. We saw the just unprecedented monetary and fiscal stimulus this year. On the monetary side, we saw Operation Twist and then QE3. I have an article that I published when QE3 happened called QE3, if you're in the real estate market, you need to pay attention. where I talk about the extent to which I think QE3 is cleaning up a lot of the criminal liabilities on the mortgage portfolio, and that's the basis of moving forward in the housing market this year. But what's incredible is we've never seen this massive amount of stimulus, both throughout the developed world. So it wasn't just in North America, it was in Europe and Japan as well. We've never seen this kind of stimulus lead to, combined with unprecedented low interest rates, lead to no economic growth, if anything, a slowdown. So this is a kind of dead cat bounce, which is a very big deal and has never really happened to this extent before. And so the question is, now the central banks and the government, sovereign governments, have dug themselves in deeper instead of digging themselves out. And so we're looking at now getting into a real serious grind. One of the things that has happened in connection with the behind-the-scenes discussions on the fiscal cliff is we're literally now seeing a drumbeat for reinventing the fundamental governance structure. We saw the New York Times on December 30th, I kid you not, come out with an editorial saying that we ought to trash the Constitution. We have the head of PIMCO at the same time coming out with an editorial saying divided government is good. And basically, you combine them, what they're saying is we need a fascist government to manage a centralized economy. Sort of the message is we can't be dealing with levering the, you know, the global financial pyramid by giving veto power to a bunch of Yahoo know-nothing people from Hickory Valley, Tennessee. I'll use my neighborhood. Particularly if they don't know what's going on, because we don't let them go on, how can we give them a vote because they're so ignorant? So you have a real rejection of democracy and the democratic process. And this is particularly scary coming in because the fiscal cliff decision that was approved January 1st, January 2nd, really is a kick the can. So all the issues of spending and the debt ceiling have kicked into February and March. Given, let's just talk a second about what March is. March is when the corporations who file on or function on a calendar fiscal year file their SEC documents and pay their taxes on March 15th. Then you have individual taxes on April 15th. Given the slowdown in a variety of sectors and given the sensitivity of the layering on of financial regulations, that's a very difficult time at best. To pop onto it, the spending cuts and the debt ceiling makes it a very politically difficult time. At the same time, I think the clear message in the market responded very positively, but the clear message of the fiscal cliff this time is corporations are going to be protected. If you look at the pork that flew through for corporate sweethearts, including Goldman Sachs, it was pretty remarkable. And again, all the talk was of individual taxes. Corporations touched very lightly. Another part of reengineering the federal finances in 2013 that is quiet in terms of the corporate media but very important to everybody on this phone call is the implementation of regulations implementing the Basel III Accord. And it is going to do a lot to make credit more difficult and expensive for all of us and small business, and it stresses the importance of creating ways to do peer-to-peer and personal funding without the banks. You don't want to let yourself get cornered on the banks. The banks are being put under tremendous pressure to basically buy treasury securities as opposed to lend money out on Main Street. One of the things that you saw coming out of the fiscal cliff discussion at the end of the year was people thinking that, there's good news, our taxes aren't going up or aren't going up as much as they expense. One of the things to understand is if you look at the vies we're in, whatever we do not pay in taxes, we will pay in debasement. Because if you don't cover the expense or the government expenses with taxes, you're going to borrow the money and it's going to translate, it's going to come around and hit us as debasement of the currency, particularly because if you look at the way the inflation is working, the machinery has found ways of channeling the excess cash into places other than Main Street. And so the revenues aren't coming onto Main Street, but the expenses are. So one way or another, it's going to hit our budget, and we need to be prepared for that diminution, not just of our dollars, but of our time as well, because it's going to hit in one of – if it's not going to hit your money, it's going to hit your time. So it's a fait accompli. And so prepare for more taxes, whether it comes in the form of taxes or debasement, and whether it comes from the federal government or the trickle-down to state and local as well. Okay, next slide, number 7, the fashion of force. Power backed by force has often been described as an iron fist in a velvet glove, iron fist in a velvet glove. The velvet is fraying. We had a wonderful Soleri report this year with Joseph Farrell on the breakaway civilization, and I like to have those kinds of reports because many people, when I talk about what has been developed with a black budget and invisible weaponry and the kind of things you see in the various Bourne movies or the enemy of the state, you know, it's all in the movies. It helps you to understand the history of this kind of funding and technology and how things got this wild without many of us realizing it. If anything brought home the fashion of force this year, it was the mass shootings, first in Aurora, Colorado, and then in Sandy Hook. We've had various subscribers going back to listen to great Soleri reports I did on mind control and entrainment technology. In fact, we had a wonderful offer at Christmas to gift a month with all the wrap-ups in the January period. And what I've noticed is a lot of subscribers pointing their friends to the mind control and entrainment technology and the other ones that will help them understand these kind of mass shootings. I give, and you know me, I'm always hedging my bets. I'm not this time. I think there's a 100% chance that both of these shootings were covert operations. I think most, if not all, of the shootings are. My guess is that Sandy as well, or the response to Sandy, was also a covert operation. Some of the draw, too. There was a very interesting story from New Zealand this week. It's up on the blog. A New Zealand researcher documents that the U.S. government had successfully tested creating tsunamis with nuclear weapons, which takes us back to my story about why I thought the Indonesian tsunami was, or people were trading it, trading on inside information, trading the tsunami a week before it happened. We did a big blog post on control files this year, and then had a Soleri report on the Franklin cover-up to help explain the Penn State and British Network scandals on pedophilia, the Franklin cover-up being a very famous pedophilia scandal, very much roped into control files on politicians in Washington. And I've tried to help you understand the extent to which those kinds of control files really are determining policy and the implementation of policy in Washington. If you look at all the senators and congressmen, a lot of those folks have control files. And if they don't have control files, they're under threat of, you know, an effort to pretend they do. There's nothing like false allegations in the media to run you out of town, as I can attest to personally. So the force that these folks are under and the threat of force is becoming more and more obvious, more and more violent. I made an effort. I'd watched The Dark Knight Rising, the third in the Batman trilogy from Christopher Nolan, this summer when it came out in the theaters, and really didn't find it particularly interesting. But Rappaport has been writing an excellent series throughout December on gun control, and it got me to go back and watch The Dark Knight movie and take it much more seriously. And I found, after watching it for about 3 times, I really went to town on it. I found myself liking it much better and taking it more seriously. I did a series several years ago on the Soleri Report on The Godfather, and the power of the Godfather series to help you understand the relationship between street crime and the boardroom. And if you look at the cash flows coming off of street crime are so absolutely critical to leveraging the securities markets and the derivative markets. And the laundering of that money is so important to those markets. And there's a very tight correlation between what is going on the street and what is going on in the boardroom. Again and again and again, when you research organized crime in this country, what you'll find is a group of soccer moms trying to back the narcotics dealers out of their neighborhood can't. And the next thing you know, they have black helicopters coming down on their head because, in fact, in a very centralized model, you can't afford for one county to get out of the tithing of the drug cash flows into central headquarters. And in fact, the black budget and all sorts of sensitive, high-tech, very sophisticated global operations are dependent on those cash flows coming from the street. And you see that theme again in Dark Knight Rising, the relationship between what's going on in the street and the boardroom, and it tightens it up a lot. In the movie, we have a nuclear bomb underneath New York. It's a wonderful metaphor for, in fact, the fact that New York is sitting on a financial bomb, and what we're watching with Basel III and the other federal financial regulation and the reengineering of the federal budget is a real dramatic cut down in the financial sector. The financial sector has grown tremendously as a part of the economy, well beyond serving its useful purpose. And as we saw with the indictments against the investigation against Goldman Sachs, a lot of deals that make absolutely no sense for any fundamental economic purpose in the real economy, they just keep the paper pyramid sort of up and floating and churning. And so New York is going through a very ugly process, and Sandy, in fact, is, sort of the material metaphor for what's happening in the financial sector. The financial sector in New York is going through a real tightening up and beatdown because, in fact, if everything is a federal credit and a bailout, then government's going to control. In Dark Knight Rising, one personal note, the hero has dirty tricks, steal his company and his money, gets beaten up and then thrown in the pit, and then manages to find his way out. And I can tell you how to live through the process. The moral of the story is a good one. You can get yourself out of the pit, and so you might as well get up and get going and get out of the pit. But it's a very interesting story of the relationship between the boardroom and the organized crime and the extent to which it's tightening up. Okay, next section, section 8, food, energy, housing, and real estate. We've talked a lot about food in the Soleri Report this year. We're going to keep on doing it. I think there's no more important part of the global economy than food, and no more part of the economy more important to your health and freedom than food. As I said before, we had a great Soleri Report with Jeffrey Smith, author of Genetic Roulette and maker of the documentary Genetic Roulette. We saw battles all over the world, lawsuits, legislation, bans, fights about the battle over genetically modified food. Monsanto and the American corporate juggernaut and the American government are working tirelessly to implement that. We saw in 2011 the sealing of the global vault in Norway with a complete storage of seeds from all around the world. So Mr. Global has a complete selection of all the seeds once they finish corrupting the seed supply globally. John Rappaport had a great series after the election on the battle for GMOs lost in California and the extent to which that may have been impacted by voter fraud. I think John nailed it. For the last 2 years, and this is at the very heart of the slow burn, we've seen the price of high-quality food rise faster than the stock market, the bond market, and precious metals. If anything, the best performing asset class was probably Iowa farmland. U.S. continues to push and use the agricultural programs in the federal government to push to become the breadbasket to the world, and that may explain some of the effort to consolidate ownership and control of farmland in the United States. In addition to agriculture being the basis of a real juggernaut, set back by the drought but still there, we saw North America moving quickly into energy self-sufficiency, particularly with the explosion of gas coming from fracking technology. Tremendous breaks for both the consumer and manufacturing. We had an outstanding Solari report in April with Jim Norman on the oil card about the impact of this on the economy. 40% of the cost of manufacturing in North America comes from the cost of energy, and so this is a tremendous benefit, particularly with the kinds of robotics and other fabrication technology that I talked about in Science and Technology and we've been talking about and blogging about all year long. One of the $64,000 questions for this coming year is will the government and the central bank try and reinflate the housing markets? Lots of effort to persuade all of us that real estate is improving throughout the country. I try and get a lot of feedback from brokers and individual markets around the country. What we're seeing on the ground, I don't see a real improvement, but I keep reading reports. One of the things we're trying to take note of is the efforts by big hedge funds and institutional investors to tee themselves up to buy bulk deals. Imagine 10,000 properties in a particular market suddenly flipping into a big institutional investor. With crowdfunding coming out, there's all sorts of opportunities to securitize or refinance those into retail. And I think I keep watching to see what the opportunity will be. My guess is that QE3 clears up a lot of the criminal liabilities, and the bank settlements also clear up. We have an announcement that a bank settlement is close on all the servicing litigation. If that's true, then the banks are in a position and institutional investors are in a position once the president is through the State of the Union, so figure that's the end of January. So by February, for FHA, Fannie, Freddie to start doing big, big bulk sales of inventory and the private markets to also accumulate big bulk sales. I think one of the big questions is what can the federal government do in a reengineering of the budget to make those big foreclosure positions very, very economically attractive to bring out? There's a lot you can do in the federal budget if you've picked up those big bulk inventories at very cheap process to bring them out. In fact, there's a lot of place-based reengineering of the federal budget you can do through those vehicles. I know because I designed the first one in 1996 and 97. So there's a game afoot. It's still too early to tell what it is, but keep an eye out because particularly with the Basel III Accords and other things happening with Freddie and Fannie, it may be possible for institutional investors to put together trusts and REITs and other structures and use corporate debt at very low cost to finance all that real estate, and it's much more economic than having it go retail. Sad to say, the American people are now going to pay for that real estate three times. First, when they got foreclosed on, and their pension fund may have lost money on it. Second, when they bailed it out as a taxpayer. And third, after Freddie and Fannie got taken over, selling it out at bulk sale at cheap price before it got engineered to come out at a profit. So watch for the inflation, reinflation of the real estate market, because something is up. Section 9, BRICS, Eagles, and Civets. BRICS, Eagles, and Civets are three different expressions, BRICS from Goldman Sachs, Civets from Goldman Sachs, Civets from HSBC. I think Eagles was, I forget which house it was from, but different ways of describing the emerging markets and the areas of the world that have a high growth rate. BRICS is Brazil, Russia, India, China, and then South Africa got added. Civets describes the countries with younger populations, and Eagles is a much bigger basket. But I don't have a lot to say on the emerging markets right now for tonight, But just to make sure you understand that with a global slowdown and the developed world choking on the debt, the areas of the world with low debt and much higher growth rates, despite the currency wars, despite the slowdown, despite the automation, we're going to see that long-term positive trend reassert itself. For part of last year, the emerging markets were trading down against the developed markets, but I think that primary trend is going to reassert itself this year. And in your business, in your reading, in your investments, you want to pay attention. Because we are rebalancing the global economy, that's going to happen, and you want to make sure you're going with it. Item number 10, market roundup. I sat down today and asked Chuck and Melanie for out at Sealing for their assessment of some of the top stories, and there was remarkable alignment between my list and theirs. Top story is the sovereign nation's willingness to sell their souls to the central bank, QE to infinity. I would add, I think the even bigger story is the fact that it didn't translate into economic growth. If anything, every dollar of increased stimulus or monetary pumping has gotten less and less of a bounce, and we really are at an economy that's close to flatlined. There's a lot in my Fiscal Cliff article to talk about why that is. One prediction they pointed out that occurred at the beginning of the year that Apple would hit 1,000. It didn't. It's now, it got up there, but it didn't hit 1,000. I would point out the reason I went to Portugal in April was the week I flew over to Portugal to do some due diligence on companies in Portugal. The Apple market cap equaled the entire market cap of all publicly traded stocks on the exchange in Spain, Italy, Portugal, and Ireland, the so-called pigs. And it didn't take too long to realize that you might want to leave technology and go into Europe. The U.S. automakers had somewhat of a comeback. Another story, reverberations from the MF Global bankruptcy at the end of 2011, really did shake retail participation. I spent a lot of time in 2012 trying to write an article on the MF Global bankruptcy and other bankruptcies, both in the commodities and securities markets, just to assure myself that I didn't think it went to the fundamental integrity of the brokerage system in the United States. Anyway, it's a much more complicated topic, but needless to say, put the fear into a lot of retail investors who, despite a strong stock market, sold into the rising market. I would add a big oh no. At the end of the year, we saw the Atlanta Commodities Exchange come in to buy the New York Stock Exchange. We all know what happened to Goldman Sachs when the commodities guys took over. Seeing the commodities world take over the securities, the biggest securities exchange in the country, to me is something that makes me nervous. Let's go through my predictions for 2012 and see how I did. I'll just take them from the top. I gave an 85% chance of war with Iran, but I said it was not going to be boots on the ground. It was going to be covert. It could be an air war. It could be Israel, but the Department of Defense is sick of being spread too thin around the globe. I was right. The intensity increased, but it was less than I expected, so cooler heads appear to have prevailed, and the covert side was very busy in Iran. I said the DOD is looking at significant cutbacks in the military budget and has no appetite for an invasion of Iran, but the drumbeat for war is very significant. I think that does explain the unprecedented firings at defense and CIA after the election, or right coming up to the election and after the election. I said the chance of a nuclear event was high, that Fukushima was probably a nuclear war, if not, but certainly a nuclear event. Thank heavens I was wrong. I'm very happy about that. I still think it's still high for 2013 and 2014. I said there was a 70% chance of the slow burn, but my fear was that we were going to buy that 70% chance with much greater violence. I think that's exactly what happened. We slow burned, and it took a lot of violence, including in the Middle East, including Libya and Syria, obviously Afghanistan and Iraq, and covertly in Iran, but also events like Aurora, Colorado, and Sandy Hook. This year, I think there's a greater chance of slow burn. If you look at the amount of money that was shifted out in what I call the financial coup d'etat, and the consolidation of that money and the cleaning up of the criminal liabilities, whether through the various negotiated settlements coming out of the New York AG's office or the Department of Justice, and then the ability of the Federal Reserve to buy up all the phony baloney paper. I think the chances of engineering a slow burn get even greater. The machinery has clearly consolidated sort of control, but it's not complete, and so I would say that there's a 20% chance of a repeat of 2008 because we have a lot of paper and derivatives piled high on top of a federal budget that absolutely has to be re-engineered. I think one of the reasons they want drones and gun control is so that they can use all the money available in the economy to keep that pyramid up instead of, not cutting retirement benefits, not cutting Social Security. I think they think it's much simpler to cut everybody's retirement benefits than to not keep that the pyramid bubbling along. Normally, if you look at the cycles in the stock markets, the equity markets, we're in for a 15 to 30% correction. Just if normal cycles, we should get that kind of correction every 3 years. Given the extent of the inflation, that correction may happen in real dollars, not in nominal dollars. And clearly one of the things to watch this January is how we trade in the first week and month, because generally after an election, that sets the tone for the year. And inflation, we really see the machinery taking the money pumped into the economy with both fiscal stimulus and monetary stimulus. And we saw this year it channeled much more into the stock market. I give a 5% chance to sort of the outlying scenarios, war, collapse, transformation. And I would argue that transformation is a greater possibility than many people seem to think. But it needs many, many of us to look at the machinery and say, you know, something, I'm withdrawing. I'm gonna proceed into the future, but I'm gonna stop supporting the people who are trying to kill me. I'm gonna raise their yuck factor, as Jeffrey Smith would say. The oil card will continue, I said. The weather wars will continue, and that the election will delay a lot of negative things that people are concerned about. That was all right. I said that Obama would be reelected. I gave him a 65% chance. That turned out to be right. For 2013, the spin is the Democrats, as I said, think they have are going to say they have a mandate. I don't think they do, but they're certainly going to try and create the appearance of that, because Mr. Global wants the control that the Democrats have promised to deliver. Let's see. 401k and IRA, I said that many, many subscribers were worried about changes to 401k and IRA, but I gave very little chance of that happening in 2012. That was right. I think that rises to the fore when they fiddle with the Social Security or the Constitution in a big way. And so that's one of the things I intend to watch out for in 2013, because it could happen in 2013. I said I expected gold to rise through 2000, and I raised that. In fact, when I did the precious metals report, Franklin, who's always more bullish than I, talked me into considering it going up to 2200. That was dead wrong, and I think if there was anything wrong with my predictions, I underestimated the extent to which the inflation would be channeled into the stock markets and the bond markets and not to the precious metals markets. Gold was up 11%. In 2011, then up 4% in 2012. The S&P was up 2% in 2011 and 12% in 2012. So it just eked for the 2 years out ahead of gold. Now, what's interesting is gold would have been up 16% for the year without the slam down in December. We have the largest ETF, GLD. Their custodian is HBC, and I wrote about this in the blog post called What a Coincidence. We were singing along in December, ready to have a smashing year, those of us who had precious metals positions, and sure enough what happened, the Department of Justice reached, so we're up 16% for the year, the Department of Justice reaches an agreement with HSBC, in which HSBC executives get a complete get-out-of-jail-free card. They totally skate with a $1.92 billion settlement on money laundering with drug cartels, evidence overwhelming. But that very day, as soon as the announcement comes out of the Department of Justice, gold whacks way down. My prediction is that the Treasury absolutely needed gold down for a fiscal cliff deal, and so it was not to be. And so gold down 4%. We're going to talk a lot more about it next week with Franklin Sanders on the Precious Metals Market Report first of the year, but I think we have a big test coming for the first 6 months of 2013, and that is, will gold's rises become even with the equity markets, or will the central bankers be able to continue to manage them in a channel that is just below the equity markets? And so how inflation gets channeled is an important thing to see, and I think we're going to see a real test of the primary trend. Again, up 11% and up 4% is not bad, but the reality is if you want corporations to run the world, you can't afford for the stock market to perform badly. I think, as I said before, in the slow burn, the big issue is the price of quality food that you need to buy to stay healthy is rising faster than all of these markets, and that's a question of, in the slow burn, how you stay ahead of your rising expenses. I said in my predictions that it was hard to imagine. Here's what I said. It's hard for me to imagine that interest rates would go lower. I couldn't believe they would go lower this year, but they did. They're still unlikely to go up. I was right. They didn't go up, but they came down even more. It's a miracle. The bond market had a good year despite incredible currency wars. And you have to give Mr. Global credit. Keeping all that money in the bond market with very little yield is quite an amazing task, and depends on remarkable amounts of volatility in the stock market and the commodities markets. Okay, predictions for 2013. I think gold is going to, we'll see a high of 1850 or 2000. My guess is that they can keep it in a managed range, and we're going to keep seeing the kind of rises we've seen for the last couple of years. I think stock markets have a reasonably good chance to outperform precious metals in a nominal terms, but they're still in a bear channel. When Chuck joins us for the third week in January, we're going to be talking about secular trends in the U.S. stock market and talk about that fact that we are in a bear channel, and we need to be careful of that no matter how much inflation gets pumped into the market. And again, with Franklin, I'm going to be going into sort of the deeper news on the fiscal cliff, and we're going to be talking about Franklin's outlook for precious metals, which is much more bullish than me, and I do want you to hear that case from him. Finally, again, I can't stress enough, both markets, commodities, stock markets, and bond markets, I think are going to be very, very volatile. But if you want corporations, again, to govern, then you're going to need popular alignment and liquidity, and that's going to come from having a viable equity market. Finally, my prediction, let me read it to you, for December 2012, in the 2011 wrap-up last year, was finally in December 2012, we will have an amazing planetary alignment. My prediction is it will be a beautiful moment for consciousness. We, after all, have a very high component of water in our beings and in our connection. I don't expect it to be a momentous moment in the material world. I think all the predictions of catastrophic events into 2012 are interesting, but other than humans blowing each other up with nuclear or other weapons, I think otherwise it's going to be an uneventful world in the material world, and that was the case. I can't speak for you, but I know the winter solstice was quite a beautiful time. So, in fact, for me, it was a beautiful moment of consciousness. Anyway, the last thing I'd said, so there's no reason not to move forward creating new beginnings. Our future is going to be what we make of it. There you go. One of the reasons to never pay attention to all the predictions of the end of the world is, you know, the future is what we build, so let's get starting to build it. Okay, item number 11, unanswered questions. Same unanswered question I had last year. Who's really running things? We have a question on that I'll address in the Q&A. I can't tell you the power. When John Rappaport and I did a wonderful Salieri report called The Power of It, towards the end of the year, where we talked about how important it is to admit that we don't know who's really running things and what's going on. And one of the powers of that is you avoid all sorts of dead-end solutions. I can't tell you how many people say, well, you know, I want to do something positive, and this is positive. And then they proceed to go ahead and do something, you know, that has absolutely no chance of working and really dead ends. And I think the metaphor I used when John and I spoke about it was, you really don't want your surgeon saying, look, I don't know why you're sick, but I want to do something positive, so I'm going to amputate your arm. So to me, I think one of the most positive things we could do is really go down the rabbit hole and say, okay, who's really running things and why are they behaving this way? I think if a lot of people were willing to leave the socially respectable official reality and start talking about that, and a lot of that has happened in the internet, I think it could be, that transparency could be remarkable. A second item, the Ides of March. We've pushed back all the difficult questions on the fiscal cliff debate and the reengineering of the federal government into March, which to me is a, I can't imagine a worse, well, April 15th would be a worse time, but you're talking about layering a lot of pressure on in a normally very pressure time. So I think sort of what's up in March is another one. The great healthcare mystery, we have the healthcare expenses exploding exponentially. What's the exit plan? I think that is an area where we need radical insight and radical change. There are lots of solutions possible, but we have to leave the current governance structure to get that kind of change. Another question, as I said, is debasement versus tax. Which will it be? One way or another, it's all coming back into your household budget, so you need to be prepared. And finally, one of the things that I've been trying to figure out, and I have to tell you I can't figure it out yet, but I will, is what in the world is the whole zombie phenomena about? I know there's meaning to it, but I haven't figured it out. So one of the things, one of the unanswered questions I have on my list for 2013 is, what's the zombie thing about? Okay, item number 12, Hero of the Year. This is my favorite. Hero, the Soleri Hero of the Year, as you know, in every Soleri report we choose a hero. And one of the reasons that the heroes are so important to me is I like, you know, I get very frustrated when I hear people say, why is nobody doing anything? Because hundreds and millions of people are doing lots and lots of stuff. And we need to start paying attention to the people who are really trying to help us and honor them instead of paying attention to the people who are trying to kill us and honoring them. And so put down People Magazine and let's start looking at the real heroes, which the corporate media very, very rarely honors. My hero of the year is Joe Cross and Phil Staples. Joe Cross is the guy who made Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. Phil Staples is the Iowa trucker who joined him in his juice fast. Joe made the movie a couple years ago, which is why it's not movie of the year, but continues to be on the internet, making the movie available for free and advising and encouraging people to to do what they call the reboot, which is using juicing. The thing that's remarkable about Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead, if you haven't watched it, I just encourage you because it's so inspiring. Joe Cross is an Australian. He's got an immune disease. He gives up on going to doctors and alternative health practitioners and says, you know, I've got to heal this myself. He goes on a juice fast, has a remarkable conversion. If you look at the change in his whole being, in his skin, his eyes, his whole appearance, his whole mind, it's quite remarkable. And he persuades, he meets a trucker on his journey. He spends 30 days in New York juicing and for the first 30 days and then travels across America, engaging Americans in a conversation about food and nutrition, which if you travel as much as I do, I find absolutely enchanting and interesting and fascinating and funny. And he meets an Iowa trucker with the same immune disease. And one of the things he points out is during the movie is that Phil goes to Walmart and buys a whole bunch of vegetables, and they, across the screen it points out it's $14 a day. to provide nutrition through juicing, buying conventional vegetables. Then he goes to a health food store, and the box comes out, and it's $28 a day, twice as much, to do it organic. And then Phil compares that to his brother's heart attack, which cost $55,000. And in those simple three numbers, and in watching Joe and Phil go through their incredible transformation in terms of their health and the diminution of their healthcare budget from simply getting healthy and not being sick, you see in one or two simple little stories a plan to completely solve 80% of America's healthcare problem on the Just Do It method. And it proves how one entrepreneur with a video camera can walk into the middle of a giant national healthcare debate that is going around and around in circles and dead end and solve 80% of the problem with two case studies that show how solutions are there at extremely low cost that are very feasible for most of us to do. And it's a reminder of the power of what a small group of people can do if they just go at a problem in a creative way and start with their own lives and the lives of those around them. You know, so Joe Cross comes clean in the healthcare and diet area and literally unfolds an example that is a tremendous part of real solutions. So it's the Just Do It answer to Obamacare. Remarkable, inspiring contribution from two wonderful men. Runner-up, I wanted to mention Dale Dougherty, who is the founder of Make Magazine at O'Reilly Publishing and started the Make Movement, which is taking the planet by storm. One of the important things to understand about fabrication technology, 3D printing, all the new science and technology, including robots, is now it means we can make everything for ourselves. So the question is, how are we going to do that? Well, maker fairs and maker spaces are designed for people to get in, learn these tools, and learn how to do it ourselves. And another runner-up to Dr. Conrad Humler, who was the managing partner of Weglin, a Swiss bank that was very verbal and very public in telling, holding up a mirror to the Americans, beautiful treatise from Humler called Goodbye America, when Weglin decided not to take any more American clients. And they got hit hard in a fight where the Department of Justice has gone after the Swiss. And I don't think, given the importance of Switzerland to a variety of different things in the financial system, I don't think that war is over. Expect to see more of that in 2013 and 2014. Okay, Section 13, Movie of the Year. As I have mentioned before, despite my love of action movies, the nod goes to two documentaries, Genetic Roulette by Jeffrey Smith on GMOs and Why the World Are They Spraying Michael Murphy. And two of those together, watching them in tandem is just so unbelievably powerful. I recommend them to you very much. If you're not inspired to change your diet and get radical about nutrition, just watch Fat, Sick, Nearly Dead, Genetic Roulette, Why in the World Are They Spraying All Together? And I assure you, it will inspire you and revolutionize your diet. Okay, item 14, opportunities for coming clean in 2013. This year, we're going to publish a redo of our Coming Clean article. We have both a Coming Clean article up on the website and an audio seminar, which you can find at the subscribers resource page on Coming Clean that we did in 2005. But we'll be doing regular reports each month on the Coming Clean theme. One really in response to requests from subscribers we'll do next month with Laura Thompson. Dr. Laura Thompson, John Rappaport's wife, nutritionist from the Southern California Institute of Nutrition on detoxing. It's going to be a survey overview of all the different methods to detox. If you want to understand the power of what's possible, you want to get younger by 20 years, again, in Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead, you can see the benefit of powerful detoxing, which is what happens when you go through a juicing diet. So I'm going to be preaching about coming clean all year. let me focus on the, to me, what is the number one opportunity in the Come and Clean area in 2013. And believe it or not, I can't believe it, I'm preaching about Come and Clean, and yes, I'm going to recommend a TV show. Can you believe it? But it is available in DVD form, so you can avoid the commercials, and that's the Masterpiece Theater production, Downton Abbey, the story of a British household. It's sort of a country version of Upstairs, Downstairs. We have the aristocratic family and then the servants downstairs. And what you see over the story, and it's been through, it's now in its third season, what you see is we have two servants in the group who are really sort of not people of excellent character, and they're always scheming and doing things which are unethical or illegal. And you see the impact of those two people and the way that their unethical behavior really cycles through the whole human ecosystem of both upstairs and downstairs and how much damage it does. You also see the benefit of having people of good character, both upstairs and downstairs, and the difference they make and their good behavior as it cycles and circles through the ecosystem. And it's a remarkable picture of a human ecosystem and the extraordinary contribution that people of good character make and the extraordinary damage that a few people of poor character make. And the message of the story is really character matters. Now, what's interesting is when we live in a world with significant amounts of financial resources, particularly if we're in a bubble society and economy, we can, you know, there's enough juice in the system to keep everybody happy and paid off, and you don't begin to understand the importance of character and how character matters the way you do when bad times hit. And debasement wears people down. It wears their resources down. It wears their health down. And that's when they start to snap. And if there are real issues of character, you have problems. And so in this period, we want to be able to shift into a higher mind. We want to be able to use creativity and imagination to deal with the frustrations of the environment in a higher mind. And that's why I want to read to you again the quote that I posted with the update for this wrap-up. And you can't say it to yourself enough. It's very important to do. Engage those among you who are visionary and remove from your life those who offer you depression, despair, and disrespect. So the most important thing in Coming Clean this year to me is get the people who are trying to kill you out of your life. Get them out of your heart, get them out of your mind, get them out of your money, get them out of your attention, other than watching them to practice predator evasion. And try and engage those people in and around your life that are visionary, irregardless of whether or not you've seen them promoted on the corporate media or whether or not they have tapeworm credentials. You are the best judge of who is credible in your world. And the more we can be our own judge of that instead of letting our enemies define for us who our heroes are, the more important it is. So you're going to hear a lot more from me this year on Coming Clean, but if I had to tell you your biggest opportunity, I'll say it again. It's a Nikki Giovanni, wonderful poet. Engage those among you who are visionary and remove from your life those who offer you depression, despair, and disrespect. Another way to say it is I had a wonderful friend who used to say, when in doubt, raise your standards. Okay, part 15, some great questions. In reviewing earlier comments related to mortgage fraud and in light of the federal program to purchase securities monthly to clear the market and reward fraud, I concluded there was one issue I wasn't able to fully explain. My question relates to the mechanics of securitized mortgages containing multiple first mortgages or of those originated from non-existent properties you often speak of. As I see it, all things being equal from the outset, there would be non-performing mortgages within a given tranche, and those would have to be covered somehow, or at least initially. Were these defaults allowed to happen immediately and value of the tranche fall with it? Was it akin to a Ponzi scheme of gathering sales for future securities sales to cover? Were there derivatives or CDS set up to cover some initial defaults to maintain the illusion of a given rating? Is it possible the coupon payment schedule was adjusted to mask this for a few years. Is it possible that certain tranches received the lion's share of fraudulent mortgages and therefore performed the poorest? Any insight you can provide functionally relating to the money flows to investors holding the securities would be much appreciated. This is an excellent question. The one thing to remember is that there are literally a whole series of different options of how this might have worked. It's a little bit like the joy of cooking. There are many recipes. But let me describe the one that I saw that I believed was what was happening in the FHA portfolio. In many of these instances, you have government guarantees, and those government guarantees can be used to generate the income, and let me explain how. If you put a series of FHA mortgages in a pool, what you can do is you can take one property and default it on multiple occasions and refinance it on multiple occasions in a way that will generate enough money to pay the debt service on multiple mortgages in the pool. So one of the things that first happened to me when I became FHA commissioner is I would see communities where properties were refinanced and defaulted multiple times in 1 year. I found one in Chicago that had refinanced and defaulted 5 times in 1 year. I couldn't even imagine how that could happen until one day I sat down and tried to figure out how the fraud was working. What that means is from that one property, which is hidden, the nature of the property and what's happening behind the pool is hidden behind a securitization. Originally it used to be through Ginnie Mae, but later on it could have been through some of the other agencies. And so what you have is you just have to have the servicer complicit in handling that process. Oftentimes, in my experience, the servicer was J.P. Morgan, who was handling Enron and Madoff and all the others. So I think it's fair to say who knows what was going on. They were also apparently the servicer for the Section 8 municipal bonds. And I think you were seeing a tremendous amount of churning of parts of that portfolio to generate the debt service on the fraudulent mortgages. FHA was a mutual mortgage insurance fund, and all you needed to do was basically skim off the mutual profits and never kick them back to the original policyholders. And that's part of what was happening. They were using that skim to do so, and the profits would never go back to the book. So that is one way to be done. But again, I think there were many, many different ways that you could churn this. A lot of it coming out of the federal mortgage programs, and I think when the housing market collapsed, that was one of the reasons that Freddie and Fannie had to come in, was you couldn't keep that bubble up any longer, and that bubble was now supporting another layer on top of it of derivatives, including interest rate swaps, and CDOs and interest rates. So I think to keep that derivative book intact, you needed the federal government to step in, and when you look at the giant appropriations that are happening going into Freddie and Fannie, my guess is that part of it is dealing with that, what's called collateral fraud or the absence of real collateral. It's not just incomes falling in the general population. It's the fact that there was no income to begin with. And so I think the big way it's gotten covered, in addition to the FHA skimming, is the appropriations going directly into Freddie and Fannie. Okay, I'm learning a lot about the Salieri Report transcripts, and now that I have something I can listen to, podcasts on the Christmas gifts, I will launch into the podcasts. I'm wondering about who is Mr. Global also. Naming names seems a bit dangerous, but my guess is they're the usual suspects. I would say they're not the usual suspects. If the names are known to you, then they're front men and women. They're not the real people. What I find is the world is generally run by people who are quite invisible, sort of being the face to the public is delegated to a variety of people, and if you know their name, they're not, they're middle management, they're not at the top. I think the big question, to be perfectly blunt, is are they human or otherwise? If you go down the rabbit hole of looking at the strangest things going on this planet, I think the question is there any truth to, one, allegations of interdimensional intelligence, which I believe are, that there's something really there. So that's a yes, but what the details of that really look like is a big question. So is there any truth to the idea that humans really are now living a separate existence, a.k.a. the breakaway civilization? And I believe, yes, absolutely, that that is the case. You know, that they've literally grown technologically separate from us. You know, so we have a group of humans who have become as if aliens to us. The third is, are there any truth to the allegations that aliens exist, and as the U.S. Navy tried to persuade me, live among us, or as the CIA, a former CIA director tried to persuade me? I don't know about that. I swing back and forth, and I don't know what to say other than I think that issue needs to be looked at and figured out. And finally, is there any truth to allegations of time travel? And again, I don't know, but I think the allegations are serious enough that they need to be looked at. So to me, I think we need to open up the rabbit hole and look at these things and understand, in addition, not just who's really in control, but what is the information that they are looking at that makes them want such extraordinary centralization? Are they centralizing just because new technology gives them the power to do it? Are they centralizing because they're afraid? And I think that fear is absolutely driving the train. But are they just afraid of, is the Anglo-American Alliance afraid of continuing to rule in a world where there are now 7 billion people in a rebalanced economy and economic power has shifted to a much broader population? Or are they afraid of something else? And the answer is, I don't know. What I will tell you is if you do the economics on the entire planet is being financially harvested. It's like we're paying a tithe into the black budget or the breakaway civilization or wherever. And the reality is, you know, the reason to go down the rabbit hole is you can't re-engineer the financial model into one from something that's draining wealth to something that can build wealth without looking at that tithe. We're all stuck because we're trying to pretend that we don't need to look at that. But if we're going to re-engineer the federal budget to something positive, we have to deal with those issues. It's not intuitively obvious to a lot of people, but I assure you when you get down and dirty and you look at the money, every county in America is hostage to a drug and organized crime business, which is financing this tithe. And until we can shift the local economy to something positive, we're stuck. Until we can shift the federal cash flows to something that supports a positive real economy, we're stuck. And so we need to know what all of this is about. Another question, I was hoping you would put forth what you found at the New Energy Conference. As I said before, tremendous opportunities. The obstacles are political. I think from looking at it, there's been a decision to let things start to innovate and prototype. It could just be to see, you know, what's there to be controlled. But it could also be the time has come to move forward. I've said many times, I think the reason that the Anglo-American group is trying to get such tight control of the global food supply is they know that new energy technology is coming, and they're bringing it out, and so they don't want to bring it out until they have something to support a global currency. If they're going to maintain their position, they need to control the global currency, and food is the thing that if they can do it, fossil fuels won't do it. As I said before, the group that did the conference is going to be publishing videos. And as soon as those are ready, there are a couple of great speeches that are good overviews to what is going on in the breakthrough energy area, and I hope to use those to recommend to you so that you can really get the benefit of that conference. It was a great conference. Hello and Happy New Year. Regarding the fiscal cliff, if we were watching the managed collapse of the dollar, then both parties want the same thing. Do you think they've had a deal in hand for weeks? By creating a crisis, it makes compromise look acceptable to the constituents because they avoided disaster. And as Franklin Sanders said yesterday, plus 2% on Wall Street was minus 2% on our purchasing power. Even though we averted disaster this time, we know now where the leaders are taking us right over the cliff. I would suggest as soon as the article comes out, we'll mail it with the update on Tuesday next week. So check out that fiscal cliff article and the discussion I'm going to have with Franklin on the precious metals report. We'll go to it in great detail. Another great question. For the first time in 3 years, I have regular TV because I wanted to gauge what most people are seeing the propaganda is very strong and very consistent. Combined with entrainment technology, is there much hope that mainstream America will ever come clean? Looking forward to tonight's presentation. I must tell you, there was a miracle moment. I had a miracle moment as many years ago when I had studied enough about what was really going on that I could start to watch the corporate media and really discern into it the true story, or if not the true story, a lot of nuggets about the true story, and maintain my state of amusement, which I can do about 90% of the time, not all the time. Sometimes I can't bear it. The only time I watch TV usually is in a motel or at the gym. And like you, I like to sort of touch base and look at what the propaganda is. I also have a couple of really excellent members on our team who will check in with the corporate media and sort of tell me what the propaganda is. And they're very good at sort of digesting and figuring out what's in the popular media. What I would encourage you to do is to understand that the amount of money and effort that is spent and the sort of entrainment technology that is spent to try and manipulate the population is absolutely extraordinary. And frankly, I think it's going to grab a lot of people and keep them, despite the fact that staying and looking at that map is having very, very negative ramifications for their health, for their financial position, and for their future. And what we all need to do is to focus on knowing and working with the people who are prepared to look at things at the way they are and not worry about the folks we can't talk out of that machinery. But I would encourage you to really get to that miracle moment where you can watch that stuff, stay in a state of amusement, and discern from it what you can about the manipulations that will help you kind of navigate the environment and even see the opportunities, because there is there's a remarkable benefit to coming clean, but being able to come clean enough so that you can wander through the corporate media, gleaning the truffles and staying in a state of amusement. So let me just turn to the webinar software and look at some of the questions we have there. We had one question about how real is peak oil in the energy crisis? Are they something that's being manufactured by the powers that be? I think I wouldn't worry about peak oil. I'd worry about peak everything. I think we have a limited amount of land, a limited amount of sky, a limited amount of natural environment. And as the population grows, we need to be much smarter. A lot of my work in the financial area is how do we align the equity markets and equity investment with places, so that there is financial incentive in the financial system to reduce consumption and integrate new technology and to sort of optimize the value and well-being of the environment and all living things. It's very easily done conceptually. It does, however, require a reinvention not just of the federal budget but of the whole central banking warfare model. So peak everything is a real concern. I don't think that peak oil is a real concern given what I believe is possible in terms of breakthrough energy technology. And as well, if you look at what fracking and other technology is doing, it's certainly peak oil is not a big issue in North America for the next couple of years. I think getting off the fossil fuel model for a whole variety of reasons is very important to do. And that's the question. How will that be made possible as a political matter, and how can we do it so it doesn't come with invasive technology that, you know, makes it worse than being on fossil fuel? Another question, did Hurricane Sandy and the shooting at Sandy Hook School combine to the 65% chance of a false flag in presumably the U.S. in 2012 as per your prediction? I don't remember using the term false flag. I may have. I just don't remember. But I do think it fits in with my prediction of more violence to keep the slow burn going. And would I say that fits in, Hurricane Sandy and the shooting at Sandy Hook fit in with that prediction of, you know, much more violence to keep the slow burn going? I would say yes, absolutely. Okay, I'm just going to refresh. What do you think about the income tax and how the IRS implements it? Would you bring someone like Joe Bannister, former IRS agent, on one of your programs? Yes, I think Joe would be a very good person to have on, and I thank you for that suggestion. The IRS is you know, I've always seen the IRS as doing what they're ordered. And so the question for me has always been, how can we persuade the people upstairs to relook at things? One of the most depressing things about the most recent discussion was that corporate taxes seem to be off the table. And when you take a look at the Fiscal Cliff article, I would encourage you to take a look at some of the information we provide on that. We also discussed that in the did a wonderful Solaria report in early December on the tax issues that were involved in the Fiscal Cliff, if you're interested. Wonderful guy from Minnesota. New annual subscriber this week, Catherine. Do you have any thoughts or comments as to the whether innovation in the biotech sector has been held back by the government, and if so, why? I suspect the government is using much of it, if not all of it, or certainly prototyping it. I don't think it's held back. I think information about it has been held back and that it's been kept secret. Now, you may know of whether innovation that I don't know of, so please, I would encourage you to send to Communicate at Solari any articles, because this is something we try and cover a lot on the blog. I like to put up as much as I can find that's reliable on that topic. We live in near Los Angeles and are thinking of buying a single-family home. Real estate is rising here and gone up 20%. What do you think the trend is for 2013, and whether real estate and gold will drop if interest rates go up? I think that it's unlikely that interest rates will go up this year. If they do, it will be by small amounts. I think the central banks have the wherewithal to keep the interest rates down. If I'm wrong about that, and there's, I think, a small chance that it could happen, we all need to be very prepared, and I'm glad you brought that up because interest rates could really sock us. One of the advantages of buying home now is if you can lock in a long-term interest rate, and even with very high credit scores, getting mortgage financing right now can be very difficult. But if you can do it, it's worth locking in those long interest rates, particularly because clearly the central banks are committed to inflation. So my guess is the chances that the powers that be are looking to reinflate real estate is very significant. Will they be able to do it this year? I don't know. There's a lot of deflation in the economy. But if you're in an area where the economy is strong, then I think real estate is going to be a reasonably good bet. You don't want to get yourself way ahead in debt. So that's why I just have to caveat that everybody's situation is unique. What you see around the country is where we have high tech, and where we have oil and gas, the economy is remarkably good and housing prices are strong. So it's very much market to market. Question from Dallas, do you think it's wise and safe to convert IRA to Roth IRA? The answer is yes. I do think there are tremendous benefits given the likelihood that taxes could go up. Of course, there are also tremendous benefits. As you know, as the subscriber knows, I don't have an IRA. I don't want money in partnership with the government because I had a very bad experience, as I've described in many Solaria reports and on the blog. But I do think if you want to avoid future taxes, it does pay to bite the bullet and get those converted. But I would make sure that you don't have all of your assets in IRAs, and if you have a heavy percentage of your savings in IRAs, that you look to get that money, to get yourself rebalanced. Let's see, any more questions? That's it. Okay, so we have plenty of chance next week for questions on precious metals. Next week with Franklin, and then Chuck Gibson in the following week on the stock market. So, in closing, I just want to say a new year begins. And our prayers are very much that this year is a prosperous and a healthy one for you and those you love. On behalf of the whole Solari team, I want to tell you how much we are looking forward this year to supporting you and conspiring with you on coming clean. We have a lot of exciting Solari reports scheduled. It's going to be a great year. To give you an example, Peter Janney, the author of Mary's Mosaic, one of the best books on Kennedy, the Kennedy administration and Kennedy assassination and what was going on in terms of real politics at the time, is scheduled to, to join us on the week when we experience the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination. I think we're going to see a lot on that this year, but we've got great guests scheduled. Please keep us posted on what would be the most helpful. A lot of what we've scheduled for the first and second quarter have come from excellent requests from subscribers, so we want to make this as valuable to you and make sure that we're really supporting you in helping you be successful in all aspects of your life, including your finances. And as I said, coming up this month, Fiscal Cliff article next Tuesday, followed by Precious Metals Market Report with Franklin Sanders on January 10th, January 18th, Secular Trends in the U.S. Equity Markets with Chuck Gibson, great overviews of those markets for the 2000-year period. Please remember, until next week with Franklin, don't remember about whether or not this is a conspiracy or there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one, and I assure you Solari is one. So, ladies and gentlemen, Happy New Year, good night, and good luck.